So after we recorded today, we had a few breaking news events that directly correlated to things discussed on the podcast. So we thought we would add this little intro before the podcast, just so it isn't completely out of date the second it's uploaded. So the first thing that happened that was important is that Shabazz Napier signed a 2-year deal with the Nets. Terms for that deal still have not been released. Daniel and I's thoughts on that are we both think Shabazz Napier is a good player. We think he's a really helpful piece to the team, but we both, you know, feel concerned about the fact that Shabazz Napier is just going to help the Nets win more games next year, win their team who, once again, as we continually reiterate, we want to lose as many games as possible so they can bring in a top five talent for the first time in, you know, years and years and years. The second important thing is we touch on at the end of the podcast. We actually get the Jabari Parker news signed with the Bulls during the podcast. And at the time, it seemed like it was a 2-year, $40 million deal. It's now been made clear that the second year is a team option. Dan and I talk a little about not being incredibly thrilled about, you know, the upside value of that. The second year team option does make it a little better. I still ultimately feel that, you know, it would have been better served for the Bulls to target something along the lines of 3 years, $50 million with a third year team option, which, you know, gives them, you know, gives Jabari a little more guaranteed money now, but also the Bulls a little more upside of actually having a guy for 3 years on an undervalued contract. And Daniel's ultimate opinion on it is just that it really helps to eliminate risk in the deal, and, you know, giving Jabari 1 year, $20 million in essence is a totally fine gamble and a great use of their cap space, in fact, and the second year team option is a really good chance to just, you know, if he's really good this year, to keep him around. And then the final thing touched on, and reporting on this seems to be mixed, but, you know, at this point, you know, Keith Smith from Basketball GM has continually, from Real GM, has reported that the Nuggets 2019 first round pick that the Brooklyn Nets acquired, which is top 12 protected in 2019, actually becomes an unprotected pick in 2020. Daniel and I both think this makes the asset clearly more valuable. We both think it's most likely going to convey in 2019. Seems like really hard for the Nuggets to not be one of the 18 best teams in the league, but, you know, you never know. Injuries happen and everything. Crazy stuff happens. And so just the Nets having the upside of that pick makes it a really valuable asset. So those are the three things we wanted to address before the show starts. So, you know, here's the rest of the episode.
Hello, and welcome back to the Truly Horrible NBA Podcast. I'm your host, Connor Allen, and joining me, as always, is my co-host, Daniel Porter.
Hello. What's up, everybody? Just hanging out in beautiful Fargo, North Dakota, visiting a friend. I do have a slight cold. I feel like whenever people have colds and they go on podcasts, they start the podcast by talking about how they have a cold. So now you know. That's why my voice might sound a little different.
Well, it's pretty cold up in North Dakota. I'm joining you here from sunny Southern California, where it's 80 degrees as always.
Well, it's really hot here. It's like 90 degrees during the day here, but it gets down to 60 at night, or like 65. So that feels a little cold.
Right. That Midwest weather extremism.
Exactly.
Well, diving in, exciting news, Daniel. Yeah. I don't think we had any mistakes in our last podcast.
Wow. Who are we? That's amazing. A mistake-free pod. Yeah. Maybe we're finally getting it together. Who knows, really?
We'll see.
I don't want to speak too soon, you know? I don't want to have any kind of... I mean, we already do that enough about NBA players.
Yeah, exactly. No need to jump to conclusions about the podcast. But we do have a 5-star iTunes review to read. This review is titled, Truly Horrible Review by Fire Tibbs.
Oh, nice.
Tried the pod based on a recommendation from a friend, and I've grown to love it. Very insightful analysis about all the components of an NBA rebuild. Wonderful discussion of prospects and draft strategy. If you're an NBA fan, definitely worth a listen. Would love to hear a pod based on successful past rebuilds that highlights the important moves that didn't make it to the national media. Well, thank you very much, Fire Tibbs.
Wow, that just warms my heart. I love our fans.
Yeah.
We have so many of them, and they're so supportive.
Always want to leave reviews on iTunes. It's great, you know. So make sure everyone to leave your reviews on iTunes. It's very important for our, the success of the podcast. It's how we get new listeners who then leave more reviews. It's kind of like a Ponzi scheme.
Plus, it'll be embarrassing if we don't have reviews to read at the start of the pod. Yeah, we're running out, so we could use some more.
Yeah, we really need some reviews, people. Come on, help us out. So diving in, I think, Daniel, the clear first thing we need to talk about is the fact that two of our teams were involved in a trade.
I know. It was so exciting. The Nets-Hawks trade. It was weird. It was dumb. It's not going to affect the overall broader NBA landscape in any way. It was exactly what I would have been looking for in the first trade between two of our teams.
Oh, it was so perfect. Like, you literally couldn't have drawn it up to be better. So the details of the trade, for those not aware, are that the Brooklyn Nets traded Jeremy Lin, a 2025 second-round pick, and 2023 second-round pick swaps.
Love the
swap. To the Atlanta Hawks. Yeah, second-round pick swaps is just amazing. So great. And the Hawks, you know, they just sent back a protected 2020 second-round pick that's not going to convey. And the rights to a guy in Europe. So, I mean, in essence, it was just them taking on salary. Yeah, just a salary dump. So, do you want to start by talking about this from the Nets' perspective or the Hawks' perspective?
Well, from the Nets' perspective, I don't think that they really lost much at all. It's nice.
Yeah,
we're worried about them being a little too good this year. And this is a step towards being less good. So, that's nice. Because Jeremy Lin, when he's healthy, is a really solid player. So,
yeah, and I guess from the Nets' perspective, we should also mention, like, the second trade that accompanied this that might end up being a three-team trade, or at a minimum is just a quasi-three-team trade, is that the Nets made a trade with the Denver Nuggets where they received Kenneth Faried and Daryl Arthur.
That's Darrell Arthur, first. Just for the record.
Oh, Darrell. Darrell Arthur, not Daryl. Darrell Arthur. A Denver 2019 first that is top 12 protected and top 12 protected each year for like 5 years. And then a Denver 2020 second round pick unprotected.
Yeah. See, I think we both love that one for the Nets. It's hard not to.
Love that one. It is a great trade. That pick could end up being the 13th pick. Like, there's a non-zero chance that is the 13th pick in the draft, which is an incredibly valuable asset.
The West is tough, you know? And it's not like the Nuggets have gotten way better. They're mostly relying on internal growth to be better than they were last year when they had the 14th pick. So if they have injuries or bad luck, or if they just, like, are, you know, like, these teams don't always grow in a linear fashion. So if they're stuck in that kind of treadmill zone again, that could be a really valuable asset to the Nets. And Kenneth Faried and Darrell Arthur are, like, solid guys, probably buyout candidates ultimately. Especially Darrell Arthur seems to be a really good locker room guy. Like, his teammates were all sad to see him go. So maybe they have value to a good team, but those guys in and of themselves are not going to make the Nets considerably better. So that's nice. At least I don't think they
Yeah, would. Absolutely agreed. I would sort of like, yeah, I don't think either guy is a huge difference maker. Maybe they want to buy out Kenneth Faried if the idea is he could just help them win a couple games, because you don't really want him around and we want them to lose as many games as possible. But, you know, this trade in terms of them getting better isn't that concerning, and getting that pick is just, you know, it's incredibly valuable. The Nuggets had the 14th pick in the draft last year, and, you know, there's real arguments to be made that they got worse this year. You know, they lost Wilson Chandler, they lost Kenneth Faried, they lost Darrell Arthur.
They're
going to have growth probably from Jokic and Harris and Murray.
That's the thing. Isaiah Thomas. I think that if Murray is as good as he might be, then we could see a big leap from him this year. But if not, the Nuggets are going to be the same team, except a little worse with less depth. So, you know, I don't think you can really count on getting much from Isaiah Thomas. And they're going to be thin on the wing now. At least they brought back Will Barton, although it wasn't cheap. But, yeah.
Yeah, that was a tough contract.
Love that. So, as usual, the Nets are doing smart, forward-thinking, forward-minded stuff. You know, we talk all the time about which team might graduate their way out of this podcast, and the Nets might do it just via free agency next summer. They're going to have, like, $70 million in room, it projects right now, and it's a really deep free agent class. Like, two stars who wanted to team up together and just go to a blank slate, which I think would be really appealing to a lot of guys. I mean, you know, you'd want to keep Jared Allen around. But other than that,
Caris LeVert too. You know, he's still a cheap wing player. Then the idea being like it could be a Jimmy Butler, Kyrie Irving team up destination. I'd be disappointed if the Nets did that. You know, that's not what I want for them.
Maybe if it's short deals, if they were like 2 year deals. Yeah. Then it starts to become a little more enticing.
But I do not want to pay Jimmy Butler's next contract. I think he's going to just fall off a cliff one of these
seasons. Yeah, if you look at guys who have played under Tibbs, I mean, two of the worst five contracts in the league are former Tibbs guys, Dang and Noah. Plus, we got Derrick Rose situation. I mean, I don't think Tibbs is entirely to blame for the Derrick Rose situation, but Tibbs guys do not age well, man.
No, not at all. Not at all. So for the Nets perspective of this kind of quasi three-team trade, I give the grade an A. And also, I want to introduce this part to the podcast. You know, we talk a lot about teams graduating from this and everything. So, you know, we kind of think about this stuff as they're in school right now. You know, they're being, you know, we're grading their school classwork. And so the only way, you know, when you're grading someone, you have, you know, class credits. So, you know, a 5-credit class is a much more intense, important class than a 1-credit class. And I think sometimes when we grade transactions, we fail to actually adequately evaluate how important they are. So I think when we grade transactions now, I want to add in a credit ranking for what this is. And for me, this is a 2-credit trade because it's important, but not, you know, it's more of a marginal move, but those things add up. You know, your 2-credit grades add up on your transcript.
At least they got a first-round pick, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
Like that, I agree with that sentiment that it's like not a 1-credit trade, but still no one's ever going to like look back on this trade as a huge significant moment in either team's history.
Yep, exactly. And then just kind of let's wrap up the Nets real quick and then we can dig into the Hawks a little more.
Yep.
So the Nets also signed the 40th pick. I'm going to mess this up.
This is going to be hilarious. I think I know how to pronounce his name, but you go first.
All right. Is it Rodions Kuroks?
Kuroks. Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's Rodions Kuroks. But
Rodion Kuroks.
Hopefully we'll know, because hopefully he'll be a good player. I'm excited about that guy. Like, I remember reading about him during the draft process and thinking he sounded like a really interesting player.
Yeah, absolutely agreed. I mean, so he signed for a 4-year, $7 million deal, so $1.75 million a year. With the first 2 years guaranteed. But an interesting tidbit I read about him is that the Nets were interested in using their first-round pick that they used on Jarrett Allen on him in last year's draft before he withdrew from the draft. He was a guy who they were considering. So, I mean, this is a guy they got with the 40th pick who last year they'd viewed as a first-round talent potentially. You know, you really got to be happy about that.
Yep, and, I mean, we'll see if that comes out to fruition, but just from an asset management standpoint, it definitely seems like a good move. They have him under contract for a few years now. And, I mean, you know, there's going to be options and availability for playing time. We'll just say that. But that's the kind of guy, that's why, like, you can't be playing Fareed and Arthur. You got to either sit him or buy him out or whatever. But you have guys in those front court positions who really need to get looks and get experience.
Yeah, exactly. Because he could just be a great stretch four option, which is what this Nets team really needs. You know, you got to hope he can fill that role.
That's what he's supposed to be. So we'll see.
Yep.
Yeah, you think the Nets are done?
We both feel really... Oh, are the Nets done? I hope not. I really want them... We talked a little about this last night. I want them to pursue a Spencer Dinwiddie trade, and what I really want them to do is pursue an Allen Crabbe trade, if possible.
Yep, at least one or the other you'd like to see happen. I guess if I were them... So it's like two totally different situations. Maybe you could even devise a trade where they're both going out, but you have... I think Crabbe is a much better player than Dinwiddie, and I'm much more confident that he is as good as he showed last season. But also, his is a bad contract, and Dinwiddie's is a great contract. That's really the difference.
Yeah.
So Dinwiddie...
It'd be really interesting if they...
Go ahead.
It'd be really interesting if they were packaged together in a trade where they maybe went out to take back a not great contract with maybe it's an expiring or maybe it has 2 years left, but it really brings back a valuable asset because you package them together. I like that idea.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of bad money around the league right now, and what Allen Crabbe has going for him is even though he's got a bad, bloated contract, at least he can play. So we had discussed an outline of something based around Crabbe for Ryan Anderson, and while there are some issues with that sentiment, I still think it's like that's the idea for what we'd be looking at as a guy, because Ryan Anderson really can't play in the playoffs, and Allen Crabbe, it seems like he could. Allen Crabbe seems like a more playoff-ready player. I guess I haven't checked how he played in the playoffs when he briefly did, but I would be more comfortable putting him out there against a modern, versatile lineup, whether he's a 2, a 3. I mean, obviously his ideal position is 2, but I think that there's plenty of guys who play the 3, especially in the playoffs, who Crabbe could hold his own against. Defense isn't his strength in general. It's not like he's going to be switching to 4. But I think he can hold his own, and then he's another guy who can get hot and knock down threes, win you a playoff game. Whereas Anderson has that shooting, but he's just so bad on defense, you can't even play him.
Yep, exactly. And so I do worry a little, like, Anderson probably helps the Nets win, unfortunately, because he's a guy who kind of helps bad teams more.
Yeah.
Because his big issue is really going against good teams. But, no, I like that basic idea. Maybe it's not Anderson, maybe it's not to the Rockets, but the idea of sending out Crabbe, maybe taking back a guy who has 2 years, similar money left, but who's just a net zero on the court, so that then the surplus value their team's getting becomes worth giving up a first-round pick for. You know, that's the idea of a Crabbe trade that we're really interested in. Because we talked earlier about the Nets possibly being a candidate to, you know, really jump out of this podcast in the summer of 2019. What I would really like to see the Nets try to pull off is targeting Anthony Davis in the summer of 2020 or Giannis Antetokounmpo in the summer of 2021. Really take a home run swing on a guy who just changes the trajectory of your franchise. And if you're not getting that guy in free agency, just wait. Just be bad again. You know, pick up another top 10 pick and just like patience is key. And they're so good at building assets out of nothing, as we've seen over the past few years, that I actually feel really confident in this team once they become good too, to continue to do moves along the margin to create further asset accumulation.
Yeah, no, that would be sweet. I agree with you, and they seem like they might be one of the smartest teams in the league. So, stay tuned.
Which teams would you consider smarter than the Nets right now?
Boston.
The Rockets and the Warriors? Those are the three that jump to mind.
Yeah, but Boston, Houston, and Golden State, definitely. And then there's some other ones that you could try to argue, I guess. But, yeah, I think the Nets are probably in the top five. Or at least the top 10 smartest teams in the league.
Which is the most important thing. More than anything else. More than where your franchise is located. More than even really like which players you have on your roster currently. For the long-term trajectory of your franchise, the most important thing is to have a smart front office.
Definitely. And unfortunately, it's hard most of the time to stay smart because you're seeing it with the Warriors right now. They're like fringe guys are just getting plucked off by other teams. They just lost a big analytics guy to Detroit this week. So that'll happen. But if you can maintain continuity and be a smart team, that is, yeah. I mean, that's how you become the Spurs, and you're just good for 20 years. Like.
Yep, and as we always say, like a smart front office isn't just one GM who's smart. It's a smart team, you know? All great organizational work is a collective effort.
Totally agree. Just like this podcast.
Yeah, exactly. So then let's dive into the Hawks a little.
Yep.
What are the Hawks doing with this Jeremy Lin trade?
I don't know.
No sense.
It kind of seems like a slight hedge if Trae Young either gets hurt or is just really, really bad. But like, obviously,
don't they want to be really, really bad?
Yeah, they and it's not like Jeremy Lin is going to prevent that from happening. But maybe the idea is that like there's other guys on the team. Like everybody other than Trae Young, they'll be more able to evaluate with Jeremy Lin if Trae Young's really bad. You know, like you kind of need to have resolution on the Herders, the Spellmans, the Princes, the Collinses, like all these guys. They're probably not all going to be legit players, especially for the Hawks in the future. But they have this opportunity this year when they know they're going to suck to evaluate them. So having a competent point guard goes a long way, I guess. But I mean, I don't like the move for the Hawks. I'm just kind of trying to understand it. It's also
I really like that perspective on it. That's the one like perspective on it that makes sense to me a little, is that the value is this. Yeah, you missed out on the first round pick that they could have acquired by just doing the trade with Denver, but you pick up the ability to actually evaluate five young pieces in a much clearer sense so that you make better decisions, or you make those pieces look better to other teams around the league, and then they're more valuable trade assets.
And I guess part of it too is they want to rehab Lin's value. And then if Jeremy Lin comes and plays really well for them, then they'll be able to trade him again for more.
True, and maybe take back bad salary out of the deadline deal and pick up a first, you know, and so it's a delayed first round pick they get. But this is frustrating because they, in essence, took on, you know, a $13.5 million contract or $13.8. It was $12.5 with the Nets, but he had a trade kicker that should push it up. Yep. For, you know, a second-round pick and the rights to swap seconds. And I think we both think by the time it's 2025, the Nets are going to be one of the, you know, 5 to 10 best teams in the league. So that's not even a valuable second-round pick anymore.
And the pick swap, really, I'll be very surprised if that pick swap happens. I mean, I definitely think the Nets are going to be better than the Hawks in 2023.
Yep, completely agreed. So it's just, it's frustrating. It doesn't make a ton of sense. But look, it's good to have a guy to mentor Trae Young. It's like, I understand the argument of wanting to have the guys around a better chance to evaluate them. But I think the opportunity cost here is higher than I would have liked it to be. And do you want to touch at all on Summer League? We're actually going to have our Summer League correspondent on in the next day or two, I think. I'm going to talk with our Summer League correspondent.
Yeah,
the end, get a full end Summer League picture.
End of the week at the latest.
Yep.
But I would be down. I mean, you know, it's like the whole like Trae Young Summer League thing is just such a Pandora's box. Anytime, you know, people have so many different agendas that they're pushing. So whether he plays good or bad, it's going to be like a huge conversation afterwards about why whatever just happened is who he really is, you know? But, in honesty, like I didn't see anything from him that fundamentally changed my perspective. He looks great when the shots are going in. And he looks awful when they're not. That's who he's always been to me.
Yep. I kind of found it encouraging almost. He got, I mean, we talked last podcast about one of the things we really wanted to see was him get into the line. He did a good job getting to the line during Summer League.
Yep.
His passing was really good. You know, I think he was making some really good reads, some really good passes. It's encouraging to see that translate from college. And when he made shots, he was dominant, you could argue. And when he missed them, he still provided some value on the court. It's nice to see that he's not a complete zero when he's not hitting shots. He's, you know, he's not good, but he's not a complete zero.
Yeah. I mean, I'm gonna need to see a little more at the NBA level in order to know for sure, essentially, because like I've been very critical of his all around game. I did see him make a few nice passes, but I've always been of the mind that he's more of like a highlight passer than like a steady hand at the point guard position. You know, I don't think that he is that great at to making the easy pass. So that,
I think that's a fair critique. He always is searching. He's a guy who searches out, you know, assist passes, not necessarily like the pass that leads to the assist, which can be concerning at times for your point guard.
Yeah, but anyway, I mean, you know, it was like a pretty encouraging Summer League for him. I don't think he's going to be ever playing Summer League again. Hopefully he has a good enough season to where he doesn't have to play in it next year. And we really, I don't feel like I'm any closer to understanding the enigma that is Trae Young after this than I was before.
Yeah, he's one of the few guys who, like, where how I feel about them heading into Summer League and out of Summer League has just almost not changed at all.
You know, it still seems like he could have such a mixed bag. It still seems like he could have such a wide range of outcomes in the NBA.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Should we move on to the Magic?
Yeah, definitely. Is there anything the Magic, else? The Hawks do have $10 million in cap space. Do you think the Hawks will do anything else?
Oh. Well, I'd like to see them maybe target a young restricted free agent or take on a salary dump. It's hard. I can't off the top of my head think of any less than $10 million salary dumps that make a ton of sense. But no. I mean,
I would mind at all if they wanted to sign Marcus Smart to an offer sheet. $10 million to Marcus Smart probably gets matched, but... You know,
yeah,
that's not awful.
What about instead of Marcus Smart, like a Rodney Hood? What if they gave Rodney Hood 3 years, $21 million, with a third year being a team option? Maybe that gets matched, but yeah. You know, I think that's at least that gives a lot of upside.
That's not bad at all. So here's the frustrating thing. Another frustrating thing about the Jeremy Lin trade is Shabazz Napier is still available. So if they wanted to add a good veteran point guard, they could have. I guess one of the things that we forget about Jeremy Lin is that he has such a huge audience and so many fans internationally. Maybe it's really just like kind of about the money, low key. But
yeah, it's a business decision.
Right.
You know, Jeremy Lin, we talk about this with the Nets some. It can be a business decision with him. And for a team that's kind of going in, it really seems like the Hawks are committing to kind of a process like rebuild. So it's good to have fans coming in just to support Jeremy Lin during a time where fan interest is probably going to waver a little.
Yeah, that's reasonable.
But yeah, so it's tough. You know, we'll see what they do. I probably would prefer them actually just to roll that cap space over into the season and then try to get a team that's trying to duck the tax once the regular season has, like, in, you know, in flow and there's no teams really with cap space, try to really get a good asset out of that.
Yeah, but I'm sure they probably
it'll be interesting to see what happens.
So let's talk about the Magic.
So the Magic had a trade as well. This was an enigma of a trade, to say the least.
Right.
So the Magic traded Bismack Biyombo and the less favorable of Washington and Denver's second-round pick in 2019 and the less favorable of Brooklyn and New York's second-round pick in 2020.
So Biyombo and in two return, seconds. Received... That 2020 second will be good, or it could be good. Brooklyn and New York could both still be bad in 2020. It depends what Brooklyn does.
Yeah, it depends how the Nets are. Yeah, and the Knicks could be good. You know, it's, they could it's add tough Durant. To say. That could Who go knows? Both ways.
Fair enough.
Yep. And in return, the Magic received Timothy Mozgov and Jerian Grant. What a weird trade. I just, like, it took me so long to digest this trade because I just couldn't really make heads and tails of it because it seems like the Magic gave up the better player in Biyombo and gave up 2 second-round picks in return to get Jerian Grant, who I don't think he's terrible. I think he could be a decent backup point guard maybe as kind of like a ceiling. But he's not really, I think he's worth a guy that you would trade 1 second-round pick for. You know, why are they trading 2 second-round picks and a better player?
And they also, you know, they even, that's they took on a marginal amount of salary. Mozgov makes like $1 million or $2 million more than Biyombo. It doesn't.
I think it's just $1 million more, but yeah.
It doesn't make a ton of sense for the Magic. Again, like there's point guards available. A team in their position could really use those second-round picks. You know, I hate it when teams act like second round picks have no value. And then when the draft rolls around, there's a lot of good guys sitting there. At least for the Magic, their summer league team played really well. That's probably one of the more encouraging summer league performances, but the like Biyombo trade, I mean, it just speaks to, it also, maybe they just wanted to distance themselves from Biyombo because it was such a bad move. Like that contract was so, really didn't make any sense.
Yeah, that makes sense. There's also, you know, Steve Clifford coached Biyombo in Charlotte, and then Biyombo left. And so, you know, there's been slight rumblings and speculation that possibly they didn't have the best relationship. You know, you never know if that's true or not, but that would explain some of the move. You know, suddenly the idea of, like, the downgrade from Mozgov to Biyombo isn't really a big deal, and it's just trading 2 seconds for Jerian Grant, who is a guy who was a first-round pick, and, you know, maybe some people like him. I'm not personally that high on him, but I could see how someone could talk themselves into him a little.
Definitely.
He did improve a little last year. But, and I don't, I actually like them getting Jerian Grant. I want to make that clear. I think he's a nice piece. You know, it's a good point guard. They need some point guards to help
Who's going to start at the point for them?
It might be Jerian Grant,
It's going to be either Jerian Grant or Augustine, probably, or somebody who's not on the team right now. So I guess from that standpoint, it was a good move.
Yeah. So we'll see, you know, but I think we should dive into their summer league because that's the most important thing that happened with the Magic, as you kind of said.
Yeah. Well, it's cool because, you know, when we were talking even before the draft, we envisioned this version of the Magic, which is super long and just stifling on defense, you know, like long arms everywhere, and guys who can switch positions, who can move their feet and contest at the rim. And I kind of think that we started to see an outline of that during Summer League, at least for stretches, when Isaac and Bamba were both on the court. I mean, Jonathan Isaac and Mo Bamba on the same team is going to be sweet. Those guys, especially if they both even scrape their potential, that's going to be a really good team someday.
It was so encouraging. I mean, Jonathan Isaac was a monster during Summer League. It's always really encouraging when the second-year player who's at Summer League turns in, like, puts in a monster performance, and he really did that. You know, it was so encouraging. He was such a monster on defense, showed some offensive flashes. Just, I mean, Isaac, when they played the Grizzlies, that's the one game I was able to watch in its entirety for the Magic. He had 5 blocks. He was so dominant. He gave Jaren Jackson Jr. so many problems, and he was, an unbelievable help defender. Their length is just unbelievable. It's just everything that we imagined the Magic could be really did crystallize during this in that Summer League performance. And they held the Grizzlies to, like, I can't remember how many points they scored, but the Grizzlies scored an incredibly few amount. They just stomped on them, and it was like, wow, like, this is really what the Magic could be someday. Like, this is what their ceiling is.
Yep, that's why we like Summer League, and it's going to be really fun to watch the Magic this year, especially at the start of the season. They are going to struggle on offense, but hopefully they are able to create some easy baskets through transition. That should happen with their defense, and then in general, like the length and athleticism on that team will be a sight for sure.
Yeah, I mean, yes, thing you really got to hope that they can translate some of that length and athleticism on the defensive end into easy transition options on offense, because as you said, the offense is going to be rough. But you know what? That's fine. I hope what they do is they just let their young guys stretch themselves, and they are bad, and they let Isaac try his hand at like creating one-on-one, and they let Bamba shoot a bunch of threes and everything and try like creative stuff in the pick and roll and everything, and they let Aaron Gordon stretch himself on the perimeter, because that's how they're going to improve, you know?
Right. Well, it is going to, I mean, if their plan is to play Gordon, Isaac, and Bamba together, it is going to raise the question, who's the three? I don't know.
I mean, couldn't it sort of be like Isaac and Gordon are like a 3-4 combo, and they just kind of flip back and forth, and sometimes, you know, it's neither of them is the full-time three? Isn't that like a way where you can alleviate some of that concern?
I would hope so. Neither of them. Spacing could really be an issue, man. Like, it's definitely possible that the spacing is bad.
Yeah. Well, they really need Bamba to turn into, like, a legitimate three-point shooter. And he showed flashes of it during Summer League, and that shot still looks really good.
His form is good. Great. Oh, yeah.
And so you just... I mean, if he becomes a 37, 38% three-point shooter, it solves a lot of problems for the Magic. And then one other note I had, I really didn't like what I saw from Melvin Frazier. I didn't find his defense that dominant, and his offense was as bad as advertised.
Yeah, well, he just can't shoot. That pick. That was a second-round pick, at least. But Frazier just cannot shoot. He'll be in the G League this year, I would expect. And, you know, sometimes guys get better at shooting. If he does, he'll have some value. Otherwise, he's Corey Brewer at best.
Yeah, yeah, agreed. Should we move on to the Kings, or do you want to touch on the Suns first?
No, let's talk about the Kings and then the Suns. That makes the most sense to me.
All right. So the big news with the Kings that they offered Zach LaVine a 4-year, $78 million contract, and it had certain injury protections. It was matched by the Bulls, though.
It was great, great for our podcast, because we predicted that.
Yeah.
So makes us look good.
We predicted that. Yeah, so exciting. Very thrilled. Bravo to us. But yeah, what did you think about that move? What did you like that decision to pursue Zach LaVine as an option? I know some people in the media have said that Zach LaVine can't live up to that contract, and that was a bad contract that the Bulls matched. But how did you feel about that move?
Well, I think that the Kings need stars, and I think that Zach has star potential. You know, I mean, if you're signing Zach LaVine to big money, you're paying him for his performance 2 years ago, more so than this year, and more so than anything for what you think he can be in the future, because he still has never really put it together, especially for a full season. I mean, is it a good fit? It's really hard to see how he can play with Buddy Hield, because I think they're both just twos, and I think Buddy Hield is good. I think Zach LaVine, like if I had to pick one of them for their career, I would probably pick Zach LaVine, although Buddy Hield definitely has a higher floor. But the issue, they already have Buddy Hield, you know? It's not like they're picking between the two of them.
Right.
So it wouldn't have been an easy fit. I mean, you know, the Kings are going to king. Like, they just need talent in there. So I wouldn't have been, like, incensed by it. But I'm ultimately, for as somebody who likes Zach LaVine and wants him to succeed, I'm glad he's going back to the Bulls. That makes the most sense.
Yeah, I agree. I think the Bulls are a better fit for LaVine, and I don't hate the Kings taking a swing at a guy like LaVine and everything, but I do think it's actually for the better that that contract got matched for the Kings. I just think there are, you know, better avenues to pursue with that cap space. Wow, because we both think they're going to be bad for a couple more years, and so it's not really worth paying a guy when you're going to be bad for two more years.
It seems like they just want to bring more talent in there. I also heard them rumored to potentially be interested in signing Marcus Smart to an offer sheet, which again, like, doesn't really make sense for them fit wise, but.
And Jabari Parker.
Yep.
Jabari Parker. It seems like Jabari's going to the Bulls, but there's now reporting that the Kings are interested too, and Jabari hasn't officially signed a contract, so we'll see. You know, at least they're targeting young restricted free agents instead of signing 30-year-olds like they had done in past off seasons. You know, that's the encouraging part about this Kings offseason. Yeah,
there's no Zach Randolph contract this year.
Yeah, no Zach Randolph contract, exactly. No Rajon Rondo contract. You know, no Marco Bellinelli contract. You know, the litany of bad moves that the Kings made. But, yeah. And they have the most cap space left in the league, you know. They're going to have some real opportunities to take advantage of that cap space.
Definitely. At some point, sooner or later. I totally agree. Like,
yep.
Going into the season, even with all that cap space, they could definitely bring in some assets. Hopefully they actually, like, are able to pull it off, you know? It's kind of a smart team thing. But,
yeah,
we'll see how they do, you know? Like, the Nets have just put on a clinic in terms of how to use cap space as a bad team.
It's been so amazing. I mean, the Nets, they're just... I love Sean Marks. I love what they do there. It's just, they do smart stuff. They do the exact type of stuff we always talk about how teams should do. And it's just nice to see that actually like come to fruition. So out of the remaining restricted free agents, who would you most want the Kings to make an offer sheet to? Kind of the options I have are Marcus Smart, Clint Capella, Jabari Parker, Rodney Hood, Montrezl Harrell.
Well, are we, I mean, kind of from it that seems group. Like Jabari Parker is about to sign with the Bulls too.
Well, it seems like there's just been a lot of conflicting reports. There was also reports that the Bucks had withdrawn his qualifying offer, and now there are reports that they didn't. There was reports that the deal with the Bulls is almost done, but we've seen no reporting. You know, like, I think he's going to sign with the Bulls, but I'm not positive, so I want to include his name here, I guess.
Okay. Well, that, I mean, that would have made sense. I wouldn't have been mad at Jabari Parker. The Marcus Smart thing is kind of tough. But, I mean, it kind of, I don't know. I think whatever team gets Marcus Smart, the issue is you're paying for Boston Marcus Smart, but you're not Boston. So I would be concerned.
Exactly. I would not be trying to sign Marcus Smart.
I mean, I love Harrell's game. I don't want Harrell to be on the Kings. Like, I don't think that makes a ton of sense. The guys who I would want to see the Kings target, they should go for, like, low-risk, high-ceiling. Like, Jahlil Okafor to the Kings actually makes a ton of sense. People would laugh, but like, give him a shot. See, I saw a video of him working out. He at least looks way skinnier than I've ever seen him look before, and he's running around, he's shooting. His footwork could still use some work, but he seems like he's trying to diversify his game and not just be a back to the basket center. I know the Kings have a million centers, but they're the Kings. Like, they're gonna be bad. Give some guys a chance.
Yeah, and look, there's good vegan food out in California. It sounds like a good fit.
Yeah, exactly.
I think the Kings, yeah, and honestly, I think for me with the Kings, I would most want them to probably just roll over their cap space, because none of these guys are great fits, and they can just get more by taking on, even just taking on like an expiring contract that's like 10, 15 million or whatever. And maybe sending back a couple of their, like, fringe young guys and trying to get a late first out of it. You know, there's ways that they can create value from this cap space with still leaving them options next summer, because they have a ton of cap space next summer. You know, I doubt marquee free agents are going to want to sign with the Kings, but they are going to have a ton of cap space. And when there's so many superstars on the free agent market, that always gives you the option of guys deciding to, you know, go team up there with a bunch of young guys and everything, and like the optionality that team has.
Yeah, the biggest thing that the Kings need to focus on this year is just figuring out what they have. You know, like, they have so many guys on their roster who have been drafted high at some point, or who were like highly touted coming out of high school, and they just need to see which of these guys actually seem like NBA players, who's actually good on their team.
Yep, agreed. Because, I mean, look, Justin Jackson looked really good this summer league, I think. You know, I think he had one of the most encouraging summer leagues from a guy who sort of struggled his rookie year out of anyone. And, like, that's a real positive. If he's actually, like, a rotation piece.
Yeah, he could be, like, he could be a player. Possibly even,
like, a starting level three. Yeah,
I was really surprised by how bad he was his rookie year. Maybe, I mean, it might just be, like, the Kings system, too. But Justin Jackson seemed NBA ready coming out of UNC. Like, he's the kind of guy who you can run around screens, and he's got the footwork, and he can get his shot off in a tight window. I mean, I didn't really get to see much of him, but I heard that people were excited about Harry Giles, which, like, that's
cool.
Yeah,
Harry Giles had – I saw one game that he looked good. I would love if Harry Giles became a player – just came back from, like, these injuries and everything. That'd be such, like, an exciting turn of events.
Yeah, well, he's still very, very young. He just turned 20 in April. So.
Yeah, definitely could be possible. I also, you know, we want to see more of Buddy Hield. De'Aaron Fox's second year is going to be really interesting to follow. Look, they still have Scal. They still have Willie Cauley-Stein. I mean, it's just, there's so many young pieces in this team. That's a great point. Like, I think the Kings, in some ways, are a really exciting team. I talked about this in the last pod, how I thought that actually they've done smart stuff recently. Like, it's really hard to be upset with the Kings just acquiring a bunch of young talent and having a bunch of cap flexibility moving forward. You know, that's what we always say young teams should do. You know, it sucks they don't have their pick next year, but besides that, they've actually are in pretty good shape.
Yep.
They're just missing that star.
And it'll be
and
hard.
We don't
to
love the Bagley pick.
No, the Bagley pick, Bagley in fact, was one of the worst things that they've done in recent years. At least in the past, yeah, like really two bad. Or 3 years. But let's not dwell on that too much. Our thoughts on him have been documented in these podcasts. People know.
Yeah, no need to reiterate it. Let's move on to the Suns, though. First of all, I mean, suffered a big upset at the hands of the Sixers in Summer League. You know, one of the biggest upsets in Summer League history.
Yeah, I was yelling. You know, I was punching walls. It's just so furious to see one of our teams squandering a great opportunity like that.
Summer League's the only time we get to watch playoff games, you know? It sucks when our team's losing the playoffs.
Exactly, and I just thought those guys worked so hard, and they really deserve to have something to feel good about, you know? Flags fly forever, and I just wanted the Suns to finally get a ring, have a banner they could hoist up, and I guess it just wasn't meant to be.
Devastating. But, you know, I think they had... Their Summer League was interesting. They had some positives and some negatives and some mixed, you know. It was definitely an interesting Summer League. I think we should definitely start with DeAndre Ayton, who had some moments of physical dominance, but I think ultimately you would have to classify his Summer League as a struggle, especially he really struggled in that last game against the Sixers.
He
doesn't actually seem as big out there once you put him with other guys who are fringe NBA players. And look, he bullied Mo Bamba. You know, he really bullied Mo Bamba in the game against the Magic. But I don't know. Lackluster effort at times. It was concerning.
I certainly didn't look at him and be like, that guy looks like a number one pick. You know, he didn't jump off the screen. He's got some potential. He has no floor game at all. He can't, like, you know, set screens or, like, just do like basic things like that on either end of the court, really. But he's a little bit of a bull in the china shop. Like, he only has a couple post moves, but he can just push you down, push you back. Like, he's a problem physically, and he's probably gonna just get stronger, get on that NBA workout regimen. So I do think he'll be a really good offensive player still, kind of like Trae Young, where I feel like this Summer League was pretty true to form for him. He showed more mostly
the
what
other
I expected.
The other concerning thing for me is that he took so many mid-range jumpers. And that's just...
Yeah,
they
got to
get
him off that. We don't know anything about Igor Kokoshkov, really. But I sincerely hope that he's a modern, forward-thinking coach who discourages the guys from shooting mid-range. Because there's a lot of three-point shooting on this team. Even Ayton should be shooting corner threes in the NBA. Like...
Yep. Ayton should be shooting above the break threes. You know, I mean, I don't care if he's not making them right now. They should be making sure he's practicing them and working on them.
True.
Because
it's important.
One of the most valuable things a big guy can do is hit that trailing three. You know, they are, you know, down low and they trail behind. They get an open three and they shoot like Boogie always shoots. Those are important shots for big guys.
Oh, yeah.
In today's NBA.
Definitely are.
Another Summer League note for the Suns is that Dragan Bender really struggled. Really, really concerning for a guy entering his third year in the NBA to struggle at Summer League. He played well in the Sixers game, but not like that well, and he really struggled in the other ones. So
yeah, not a good look. I still have my house on Bender Island. It's, you know, the shoreline has started to approach. I'm getting a little nervous. But I think that there is still a chance that he becomes a useful NBA player, but it's a couple years away. Like, he doesn't have it together right now, and it probably won't be for the Suns when he does get it together. I think if they have aspirations of being good this season, he probably won't play, at least not much.
Yeah, I was talking to someone who said that it's really time to start talking about whether or not Dragan Bender's fourth-year team option is going to get picked up, based on the way he looked in Summer League. And look, we're both probably opposed to that idea.
Oh, that would be a disaster. Look at Hazonia. You have to pick up those fourth-year team options.
Exactly. But I think we should start considering whether or not the Suns might pursue that course of action. Just because we wouldn't do it doesn't mean the Suns won't. You know, they're going to have cap space next summer. Maybe they think they can do more with $6 million in cap space than have Dragan Bender on their team and everything. And look, we disagree with that, but I think it's something we should keep our eyes on in regards to the Suns. I don't think it's out of the cards in any way.
Yep. I agree. And I feel bad for Dragan, but he's been horrible. That's what happens if you're a third-year player and you're really bad in Summer League. Hopefully he'll get it together.
Yep. Other Summer League notes. So Shaq Harrison
played really well.
He's an NBA player, I think. His defense is great.
Yeah, agreed. I think the hope has to be that he's like the backup point guard when Booker's on the bench almost, which is encouraging. You know, the fact that that guy's playing well in summer league and there's some hope for him as like a backup point guard moving forward and everything, like that's a positive to come out of summer league. You have to be encouraged for the Suns.
Yep. And, I think Mikal Bridges did his thing too. Like he is mostly, especially on the offensive end, going to be a catch and shoot guy this season. And he made him at least a decent percentage. And I think there's a chance he could shoot like 40% from three, even as a rookie, or upper 30s. Like his shot, it looks weird, but it goes in. And one of the things I look at for shooters is how do their makes look. Mikal Bridges' swishes are so pure when the ball goes in. It's like not even remotely grazing the rim. And I think that's really important for a shooter. I think his shooting is going to translate well. And hopefully his defense is good, but it'll probably be bad at least his first year because that's what happens.
Yep, agreed. I thought he looked good too. I was encouraged by what I saw. And then
here's a Woj bomb, Connor. Jabari Parker has agreed to a 2-year, $40 million deal with the Chicago Bulls.
Wow. But
Milwaukee didn't rescind his qualifying offer until this morning, right before the deal was signed.
Right. Okay, got it. Wow.
So we'll see what happens there in Chicago. I wish
that was a 3-year $60 million with a third-year team option because the surplus value they can generate from that contract just seems really low, you know?
Definitely agree.
Damn. That's really interesting. I'll be interested to see how that works. I like Jabari. I still kind of believe in him. But, you know, the knee stuff is concerning. And $20 million a year for only 2 years, like, that's a lot of money. At least the downside is low. But the upside's pretty low too, you know, which is the concerning part.
Yep. Because he can just leave again. I mean, I'm really only excited about it from the standpoint of he's from there. That's about it for me, though. Like, yeah. I think he needs to play the four, and I think that Markkanen and Carter, like, that might be the best young 4-5 combination out of any of them in terms of guys drafted in the last 2 years. Like, I really like that.
Completely.
And so is Jabari even going to start? Are they going to start him at the three? Are they going to not start Carter to start the year? Start Lowry at the five? That's kind of scary, but I mean, Lowry's at least going to have to be able to slide to five long term. I don't know. We'll see.
I feel like the plan has got to be to start Jabari at the three and then Markkanen has to play some five and Jabari will play the four during those minutes. And that's like pretty much will be their big man rotation. I'd like to see them get rid of Robin Lopez now, though, if that's the case.
Right.
You know?
Right. I mean, if there's even a team that would want him. Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah. Oh, that's really interesting. Well, that was kind of like the reported number and everything. I was hoping that the Bulls were going to get a little more out of that. And it probably seems like the plan is to start a lineup of Chris Dunn, Zach LaVine, Jabari Parker, Lauri Markkanen, and Wendell Carter.
A lot of talent. That's a lot of talent. You know,
a lot of talent, you know. I mean, those are five top 13 picks, you know, and four of them were in the top seven, you know. Like, that is a lot of talent. But, you know, we'll see. I mean, it's an interesting young core, and I like what the Bulls have for the most part done. I mean, the fact that they went from a year ago having that depressing Dwayne Wade, Jimmy Butler team to this young core, you got to love that.
I know.
That
it was rebuild. A quick, you know, that's a really a quick turnaround. Rebuild. I agree. Could be a lot worse.
And look, as I said, the downside risk with Jabari is he's just never the same. And after 2 years, you have cap space while Lauri Markkanen still has a tiny salary number. You know, it's not the end of the world in any way. So you can still have one more chance to dive in.
Yep. Usually when we look at free agent signings, we're like, what's the chances that this guy dramatically overperforms this deal? And in this case, it's very, very slim.
Yes. Very unlikely. Very, very unlikely. I don't hate it. It's interesting. It'll be fun to watch. And as you said, it's always fun when guys go back to their hometown and everything, especially when it's a guy like Jabari who seemed to like really want to go back to his hometown. And I remember when he was drafted to the Bucks, he was really excited because it was so close to Chicago.
Yep. Yeah, this will be fun. At least from that standpoint.
Final thing we should touch on in relation to the Suns is that there's been reports that came out over the past couple of days that it now seems like the one-and-done rule will be eliminated for the 2022 draft instead of the 2021 draft. That makes trading the Heat pick much more palpable. You know, I still don't like it because the upside of that pick is still high, but the upside is much lower when it's not a once-in-a-generation draft, you know?
Yeah, I saw 2022 at the earliest. So we'll see what happens there.
Yeah.
Hopefully we'll at least have some kind of certainty. Well, they got to do 2022. Yeah, for LeBron, right?
That's what you're going to say? That's when LeBron James Jr. could come in.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
But yeah, so that makes it so it's less important. And, you know, it's sad to see a valuable asset like that disappear from our group of teams. But at the same time, a new incredibly valuable asset came in the Nets 2025 second round pick that the Hawks acquired. You know, really excited about that pick. It could be anything, you know?
That's true, dude. And the fact that there's a pick swap on the board is incredibly exciting.
Oh.
At least a potential pick swap. Exactly. So, you know.
One of my favorite memories ever was being at the Rice to Ricky Sanchez lottery party when the pick swapped. We were both there. That was an amazing moment.
We witnessed the pick swap. There were strangers hugging each other.
Yeah.
Oh,
we were hugging strangers?
It was a ridiculous moment. Yeah. Drinking vodka Shirley Temples. Just living it up.
Oh.
So.
Living it up. What a time.
Pick swaps. They don't happen every year.
So. Yeah, exactly. The swapping of picks, though, that's what we live for on the Truly Horrible NBA podcast.
Yep. Anyways, I think that's about it for this episode, right?
Yep.
We got anything else?
Yeah. No, I don't think so. Well, talk to you sometime this week or next week. And,
thanks, everybody, for listening. Leave reviews. Hit me up. I'll be back in Minneapolis soon. Thanks for listening. Peace.
Yeah, peace.